capacities in my work at a private RTO in Victoria. I've known Carol for about 4 years now. We met when we were both Australian Flexible Learning Leaders. And the thing that impressed me 4 years ago and still impresses me is her wealth of knowledge and excitement and eagerness about mobile learning. So over to you, Carol.
Thanks, Debbie. I'll just get the the PowerPoint up again if I can. And thanks everybody for coming and listening. Where are we? There we are. Just give it a second to come up and then we can get going. What I want to do is making an assumption that many of you will find that you're new to mobile learning. What I thought I'd do is take you on a little journey of where mobile learning's come from and some of the challenges that are in front of us. And then what I'll do is also show you a couple of little things that I've been doing. And in the process of talking about this, it's a bit of a travelogue because mobile learning's been moving around the world, which is great. And the idea is not to brag about the travel as much as to really be able to tell you what's happening and where it's coming from. Please feel free to ask questions as we go along. I'm happy to answer what we're doing. There's opportunity at the end to ask questions. And then when we finish that, I want to get a little bit more out of you in terms of what you think you might want to do with mobile learning and if there's anything I can do to help you take the first steps and get yourselves going. So with that in mind, and I know that this takes a few seconds, I'll move on to the first slide. Mobile learning as such really started to happen in the UK and in Europe in about 2002. And the very first gathering of people to talk about mobile learning, it couldn't really be called a conference, but it was perhaps a seminar of probably about 30-odd people who got together. There were some people from the UK, there were people from Finland, Italy, and probably that was about it, a few others from other bits and pieces around Scandinavia. And they decided that mobile learning was worth looking at. And in 2002, bear in mind that it was just about mobile phones and there wasn't a lot else. But they decided it was worth making the effort. And so in 2003, they held the first proper mobile learning conference in London. And during the course of this conference, the sort of things that came out of it were things like they started to look at mobile games. And one of the beauties of mobile learning is that when online learning happened and first started, it was kind of forced upon people and people didn't look at the medium in which the learning was happening. What they did do is they just said, oh, let's get everything online. So you had exactly the same format of material online as you'd had in paper format, and it was very difficult to read and very difficult to use. So when mobile learning first started, the very first thing everybody started to look at was what people were actually doing with their mobile phones then and how we could actually make that into learning. So that right from the outset, the whole concept of learning games was happening. And then there were other issues of looking at how we would manage the knowledge, the types of learning. Texting was a big thing for using for mobile learning, and certainly here in Australia, the first things that happened with mobile learning was people were starting to use texting. And even just as a communication tool between teachers and students, texting was the first thing that everybody did. And the interesting thing about texting that still applies now is that it's fine for a student to text the teacher at any day of the night, any time of the day or night. But it's not all right for the teacher to text the student at any time of the day or night. So there's some very interesting little rules that have since come in. And the quote really that sums up that year was the quote I've got there at the bottom from a guy called Professor John Traxler. John is at Wolverhampton University, and his comment there was that mobile learning is at a scale of small scale projects. Everything was little, everything was isolated. Everybody was worrying about small devices. They were worrying about the cost to a student of a text and how people would manage that. And those were the things and the thought processes that happened with that. And then the following year, we started to see a much bigger collection of people. We started to see people coming from further afield to start talking about mobile learning. And when the slide comes up, ta-da, we went to Rome. And you can see in Rome, obviously we had to have the Colosseum in the picture, but the place that we actually had the conference was about 40 kilometers south, I think it was, of Rome, at a place called Bracciano. Bracciano is a holiday resort. It's on the edge of a lake. It's a huge volcanic lake. And the castle there, Oldestani Castle, is actually the castle where Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes got married, but we were there first. And what we discussed, and there was something very interesting about being at this conference, because there we were in a castle. It had 15-foot thick walls. It was built at a time when popes were warlords, and we were discussing the most leading edge technology you could possibly imagine. And I'll just pause for a moment. That's all right. Yep. Okay. I'm just checking the text. It doesn't scroll always, so I just don't want to miss anything. And what started to happen in Rome is we started to see a more pedagogical approach to mobile learning. We started to see how people would use mobile learning in the context of teaching and not just as a game or an adjunct and those sorts of things. We started to talk about the usability of digital learning materials. We started to look at how things might be set up to use on mobile devices. Bearing in mind, in 2004, we were still mostly dealing with dial-up. We were still having relatively limited access to the internet. Web 2 was still just a bit of a frisson of an idea. It wasn't really happening. We were starting to see smarter phones. And so everything was just beginning to be a little bit more viable, a little bit more usable. PDAs and mobile phones were starting to be used then. And at that stage, at that time of that conference, there was only one phone that was a PDA and mobile phone, and that was the XDA. And it wasn't until the end of that year that Hewlett-Packard came out with their first ever phone and PDA model. So at this stage, the technology is still very young, is still very evolving and developing, and that was a part of the process. And while we were looking at some of the same things we looked at in London, we were beginning to see them in a greater context in terms of the way that it was working. The following year, we went to Cape Town, and in Cape Town, we started to really have a strength of movement. We had a bigger number at the conference than we'd ever had before. And we started to talk about convergent. We started to talk about content management on mobile devices. In 2005, we started to have more mobile technology. We could have a situation where we could have teachers be training and learning how to use it. We started to see different systems coming into place. And one of the interesting things in South Africa, for example, is that across the whole of South Africa, there's probably only about 4 or 5% coverage of the internet, but there is a 90% coverage of mobile phones. And so a lot of the stuff that was happening, you'd go into these little villages, you'd see little sort of dirt floored rondavels, but everyone would have a mobile phone. And what they would do is they'd go into the little village and there'd be an old shipping container that was set up to charge their phones. And so you had this coverage, and so there was an awful lot of activity that was going on. There's some fantastic material that was coming out of South Africa that we were seeing of identifying birds and animals and getting the information from them that you could do on your mobile device. And mobile learning games were starting to get a little bit more sophisticated. And of course, we had to go out to the bush, and I've got a fabulous photo of me using my computer in the middle of the bush. And what happened is that we got, in one of the places we got charged by an elephant. And I took film of it, and I went back to the tent we were in that night. I converted all the film into a little movie and took it to dinner with me that night and showed it to everybody. And we downloaded it onto other people's phones and PDAs and things. And that, to me, was a really strong example of the way it all works and the way it happens. So it was a hell of an experience, and it was really, to me, it was the first time we started to see a real change in what was happening and where mobile devices were starting to be seen a little bit more as of the norm and a little bit more in terms of real practicalities. But we were seeing a lot of visual devices, a lot of visual imaging. We weren't seeing a lot of sound, and it wasn't until we started to get to 2006, we all went to Canada, and we started to see then the use of audio. And I think audio at the moment is taking the lead in terms of what's happening with mobile devices, with the iPods, with the MP3 players and all the rest of it. There's a whole heap of stuff that's happening using mobile devices for audio, which is probably what they should be used for, but it's just interesting. The big thing that was presented to us in Canada in 2006 was the $100 laptop. And we were presented this by this woman from MIT, and she talked about all the things they had to do, and it's really quite stunning. And I don't know how many of you have paid $2,000 or $3,000 for laptops, but that you can produce a laptop for $100 says an awful lot about who's making money out of the hardware business. And we heard about this. The way that the $100 laptop works is that it's not battery operated, it's wind up operated. The idea being that you would wind it for 5 minutes to get an hour of charge. And one of the conversations that we had with the woman was, well, you know, winding something, if you imagine doing a wind up for 5 minutes, that's quite hard. And a lot of people would find that difficult to do. She talked about the fact of having maybe a pedal means of charging it. So we all had this wonderful vision of all these people sitting on planes pedaling like mad to make their laptops charge. But it's just a great concept, and there are countries that are buying thousands and thousands of them to put out to kids so that they've got laptops. And so there's some interesting things. The other thing that I think was particularly interesting out of Canada is we started to hear more about digital libraries. We started to hear about how whole universities, and one of the universities there, Athabasca University, was putting its whole library into digital format. So every single book in their library you could obtain electronically. Well, you will be able to. It's not quite finished yet, the project. But that's the sort of thing that they were starting to do. So you could access that and download all that information easily and with increasing mobility. We started to hear more about the net generation. Now, we've all heard about Generation X and Y and all the rest of it. But the issue of the net generation was one that was much more pertinent in terms of the way you're going to interact with people when you're going to teach them. And the significant issue about the net generation is the fact that they have what's described as a hypertext mind. They don't think in a straight line. They don't gather their knowledge in a straight line. And if you imagine taking all the pages of a textbook, ripping them all out, laying them all out on the floor, and the student will come along and pick up the bits and take them as they want them. And if they haven't got the knowledge to finish off doing that, they'll scrabble around and find another bit of paper. They won't start at page one and finish at page 200. They'll do it in whatever order takes their fancy. And when you look at a lot of the websites and a lot of the my Facebooks and my MySpaces and things like that, they're also designed like that. You know, they look like chaos. They're all over the place. You click this, you click that, you jump here, you jump there. That's how that generation and the generation of learners operate. And so we started to hear a bit more about that. It again makes a difference in the way that you put together learning materials. And when you start having to bring learning materials down to small bites, it starts to make sense, because you can do a lot of stuff in small bites, and it's not necessarily critical that it has a certain order. We started to hear a little bit more about social computing and how that was impacting on things. And we started to talk a lot more about teacher skills and how they would understand. And one of the papers I presented there was about setting up teachers to understand how they need to review their learning materials, how they need to review their lesson plans so that they can take advantage of being in the digital age. And as I said earlier, we started to talk a lot more about audio. All of a sudden, everybody was doing audio programs. Everyone was looking at podcasting and sound and those sorts of things. And while they were looking at sound, a lot of the sound was and still is held into main computers. A lot of podcasting you sit at your computer and listen to. So there's still a little step to make it truly mobile. And while people will download music and put it onto a portable player, they don't necessarily download a lot of other things yet. So that's a part of the process and the progression. And then following Canada, one of the other things about Canada, without wishing to be too rude, it wasn't the best organized conference. For a conference being held on the North American continent, the numbers weren't great. And we were very disappointed that very, very few people actually came from North America to Canada, when you think that some of us have travelled halfway around the world to go. But then we had it in Melbourne, and of course that was the best one ever. And we had a fantastic time organising this conference. We had it at the end of last year, and the issues, and we particularly chose the title Making the Connections, because we did want to connect not just people, not just teachers and students, but we wanted to connect industry. And one of the big things that we had discussed at various conferences was the fact that we had a bit of a disconnect between the hardware and software manufacturers and, yeah, good idea, Leslie, but I'll talk a little bit more about that. And we wanted to make sure that there was a connection between the software, the hardware, the teachers, the students, the public, the parents, and all of those sort of things. And so we had, we worked very hard to get that together, and we did do that. And we also looked a lot at social computing on mobile devices. And for example, everything to do with the conference was done electronically as much as we could. Even the organising committee, I think for the whole year, we probably only had about 3 face-to-face meetings, and everything else we did online. We did it by Skype, we did it by Illuminate, we did it by emailing and mobile phones and things. So we really did run walk the talk. And we had a Twitter account which we set up, and we had a number of people at the conferences who did blogging and stuff, so that from the moment the first speaker started speaking at the conference, notes were going up onto blog sites, notes were going up onto Twitter, and through the whole of the conference we had a whole Twitter thing going. And people are still, it's still running, and people are still joining it. We talked a lot about pedagogy incorporating technology, and this was a part of making the connections. And that line at the bottom was really the biggest takeout from the whole conference, is that technology won't fix bad pedagogy, but it gives a massive power to good teaching practice, and that was really important. We also talked about the devices as tools instead of just toys, and we started to investigate this whole sense of, for us, we look at a piece of equipment and we go, gee, that's an interesting piece of equipment. Most people of the next generation who pick it up think, yeah, but can I talk to my mate on it? And they really don't care what it's like or how it is. And there are things. But the guy from Nokia came along and he talked about mobile devices and the phones and all the rest of it. And his line for it was fondlability. And he did demonstrate the fact that everybody holds their phones, they fondle them, they play with them. And so they had to have that, and they had that fondlability. We talked about integration and embedding, and we started to see more and more use. And by 2007, mobility has taken a huge step forward, not only in mobile devices such as phones and PDAs and things, but generally in mobility, in wireless. We had a wireless connectivity everywhere in the venue, as we would expect to have. We ran a question and answer session by means of wireless from the floor of the hall into the computer that could go up to the speakers. We had people talking to each other. We sent out SMS messages to delegates at coffee breaks and lunch breaks, telling them to get back into the halls. So all of those things we were starting to use, and we were starting to embed the technology and make it work. It wasn't just a toy, but it was actually a functioning thing. And we started to look forward, and one of the things that we did look forward to and we did create at the Melbourne conference was the International Association for Mobile Learning. And if you're interested in this website, just to start getting people involved, and I'll show you that later. But we started to think about what was going to happen next and how we were going to go about it. And we had started the process of forming this association had started in Cape Town. And we had a meeting at the end of the conference in Cape Town where we discussed what we would try and do and how we would try and form an association. We got to Canada, and the Canadian guys had very kindly done a lot of work to set up the association. But we discovered it was going to cost us four arms and three legs just to be insured in North America. So we kind of went back to the drawing board, and we've now set it up. And I think the organization is incorporated in South Africa. I'm looking after the website at the moment. The administration will be happening probably out of the UK. So it's a well and truly international organization. And that was a part of the really positive outcome for the Melbourne conference. Next year, the MLearn conference will be in Ironbridge in the UK. And there's a website as well that you can have a look at that. And then I just want to finish off with talking about some of the challenges of the future and some of the things that we have to think about with mobile technology. The biggest challenge and my biggest bugbear ever is battery technology. Battery technology has not kept up with any other technology anywhere. It is poor. It doesn't work as well as it could. We have a constant process of trying to make batteries last longer, work better. We ask more and more of them. And for any of you who've seen a PDA, a personal digital assistant, like an iMate or an XDA or anything like that, it has a huge screen area, and that's what really chews up the battery. But there are those things. We want it to do more. We want to go onto the internet using our mobile devices. And it is still a problem. So that's don't start me on batteries. Social computing on mobile devices continues to grow. There is an issue that sits with it, and that's still the cost of connectivity and the cost of coming backwards and forwards. And universal connectivity is the other issue. Now, I have a personal belief that the first city in Australia that makes the step of saying we will have universal free wireless for the whole city to get onto the internet, I think that city will make a huge step forward in terms of attracting business and attracting tourists and attracting visitors. It will be absolutely phenomenal. And if someone was brave enough in government to do it, I think it would be brilliant. And it was actually one of the ideas I sent up to the 2020 summit. And I was actually invited to go, but not to go, to apply. But I wasn't picked in the end. But that was the idea I put forward. And obviously it was too hard for the moment. Some of the other issues are corporate buy-in. Now, a lot of you will be teaching in organisations that haven't yet grasped moving into the digital age, working with mobile technology. It's not necessarily an easy thing. Any organisation, any institute, any TAFE, any college, any provider, there's an expense and there's a huge cost that they can end up spending trying to get into and keep up with technology. And so I'm not super critical, but what they do need to do is they need to think about it strategically, and they need to decide that that's the road they're going to go down. Now, the beauty of a lot of stuff at the moment is there is so much open source software, there is so much on the web that you can access that, you know, you probably don't need to spend as much as you think you do in terms of buying proprietary software, in terms of setting up stuff. You probably do need to spend money for hardware. You do need to buy equipment, and you do need to spend money on training the teachers, on giving them the resources and the support and the help, bringing in people to help the teachers understand how to get themselves up and going. So it's a bit of a double-edged sword, but it's something that organisations haven't quite grasped yet, and it's something they need to do, because if they don't, then they won't be able to take the next steps forward, however small those steps are. Integration embedding continues to be a challenge, and that's a part of the same process. Often you'll find teachers or an individual teacher or an individual group of students will go out, do something really, really clever, but there isn't a mechanism by which they can then spread that to other groups within their college or provider, or do more with it, or take it further. And so you find these one-off things happening. The other challenge is the pedagogy in a digital age, and that really is about understanding how the technology works, and therefore how you need to change your lessons down to a size that works in that digital environment. And so, for example, where you might have a whole lesson plan that involves a number of things, including some handouts, including some activities, it's a matter of taking that and breaking it down into smaller and smaller lumps until it is easily done with the mobile devices or small devices or other means and other activities. And it's just a matter of understanding. And I've got a little matrix, which I haven't put up on this for the moment because I'm just changing it over a bit. But basically, it's a matrix that looks at any given subject and all the different ways that you might be able to deliver within it, and then work out which things you want to focus on. Learning Resource MTools is really about finding the things that will help you make mobile content available, help you make materials that can be delivered that way. And there's heaps of stuff that's available free. There's some more stuff that's more costly that is specialized that you can certainly use. And that's a part of what I'm doing with a number of organizations at the moment, is working out how we can step into doing those things and make it work. And there's some fascinating stuff that if you mooch around the internet, as I seem to spend half my life doing, you can find this incredible stuff. And then, of course, the conference later this year in the UK, and that will be another step forward. And I think it'll be very interesting. One of the contrasts that I think we might find is that at the Melbourne conference, the overwhelming majority of people who are doing things in mobile technology and in mobile learning are vocational teachers, whereas in the UK and in Finland probably is the other biggie, it's very academic. There's a lot of universities that are doing things. There's a lot of universities that are doing work on it, and so it's a much more academic bent. So there's always this challenge, and I'm probably the strongest vocational advocate on the Mobile Learning Association committee. And so I find it quite interesting because all these guys talk in academic speak and all of that sort of stuff, and I'm saying, yeah, but what about this? And what about something practical? And they all sort of look at me in shock horror, but we're getting there. So I think what will be interesting is that Armbridge will probably have a much more academic bent than did Melbourne. And just to conclude, I just want to bring your attention to my favourite quote of all the world. It's from Janet Holmes-Acourt, and she says, "Resisting change is like holding your breath. If you succeed, you die." And everything to do with mobile learning is about change, and it's about changing all the time. Rule of thumb with technology, it's out of date every 90 days. That's why you have to keep moving with it, and you have to keep accepting change. And interestingly, one other little statistic which I will throw at you, there are now 21 million phones, mobile phones, in Australia. And if you think about that, that sounds like a lot, but then think about the fact that we have a population of 20 million. So I know I've got 6 mobile phones, but I've still only got the 1 SIM card. But there's an awful lot of mobile phones out there. And interestingly, a very much smaller, I think it's about 6.5 million people have access to broadband. So in terms of using mobile learning as a means of reaching people, it has a huge advantage, and all we have to do is make sure that we work out the right way of making it work, or the right way of putting our material together so that we can take advantage of this fantastic means of communicating. And now, please, anybody who wants to, ask me questions.
I don't know if you want that typed or spoken, but Carol, I'm really interested in use of audio with mobile devices, whether they be phones or iPods or similar. And I'm thinking of using them with ESL students, sending and receiving things, recording with their own devices. Have you got any experience with that? Any research being done there, or what?
Yes, there is some. There's been quite a lot of things being done. I'm a little bit caught because I'm actually doing a job for someone at the moment exactly in that area, so I don't want to preempt anything I'm about to do for them. But if you have a look on the internet, there is a ton of podcasting for ESL. But the problem is that it's all podcasting that tends to be sitting in a way that is waiting for people to go and pick it up. So if you...
Okay, I'm not sure what happened to Carol there. She's dropped out of the room. It looks like she might have been disconnected. So Just give her a chance to come back in. She's absolutely fantastic. If you want to know anything about how to move things to a mobile site or how to build materials, this is the lady. So, yes, she talked and ran away. Here she's back again. I'll hand over the mic.
Sorry about that. I think my wireless went for a little holiday. Can someone just tell me at what point did I get cut off?
I think it was very early in your explanation of telling us that you were working with someone and you didn't want to preempt what you were doing with them. So.
Okay. Boy, that was a long way back. basically what I was saying is that there is a plethora of podcasts that are available for free, and most of the sites where they're offering ESL on podcast, you can get the podcast and download it for free. But what you can do, mobile and sending it to teachers. Okay, yeah. And there's a mob in Ireland who've just presented a project that they've been doing, that they've done something very similar to that. What they've done is they've set up and they've created this enormously expensive server software. And the idea being that the student will phone in using their mobile phone to the software and have a conversation with the computer in the language. Now, they've been using the Irish and the Gaelic for this particular project. And they also have a facility where one student can talk to another student. So they've set up a little scenario, and there's a teacher in the middle that mediates it. But the server software records it all. And they then mark it and have a look at it and discuss it. So that's one option. If you want students to record using their mobiles and send it to teacher, that's fine, but you need to just make sure that you look at the cost of sending it. And one of the big issues that we keep having with this is what it's costing a student to transmit. And using different ways of getting that cost covered is a part of the lesson that, or the lessons that we're trying to learn at the moment.
Yeah, Carol, what I was actually thinking about more is students recording using their mobile, whether it's a phone or other device, and downloading it later. So, I'm very aware of the cost. So, yeah, just being able to record at any time in their own time and then bring it to class and downloading it there or downloading it onto computer and emailing.
Yeah, absolutely easy. If they want to record it, they can upload it through the computer. You can have it uploaded to a website. As Debbie says, there's Wimber Voice on TAFE VC, which I think you have to record on. I haven't looked at it for a while, but you may be able to upload your own recordings. But the idea of recording something on your mobile device and bringing it into class and then discussing it and dealing with it, I think it's great. And, it's something I'm happy to talk to you about a bit later about how you might want to work that. In answer to Rachel's question, basically, if you want to have more hands-on lessons, it's not something I can do over the phone. There's a couple of things I'll show you in a minute. That you might be interested in, but if you want to have more hands-on lessons, we need to look at what you're trying to teach and need to know more about what you're trying to teach, and then we can talk about how we can break it down and turn it into things. There are things that you can do, as we said earlier, there's voice recordings, and also you can do things like digital storytelling where you can compress them down into movies. There's things that you can do to start that process. You can get assignments done in digital storytelling. You can get little mini movies that the students make on their devices. Those are the sort of things that probably are worth looking at to start with. Pam, in answer to your question about ESL podcasts, if you put in English as a Second Language podcast into Google, I think you get about 218,000 hits. So probably have a little look, and then we can start to, you can take that conversation further after that. But there's an awful lot of rubbish in there. And when you start to look at them, you find that a lot of the roads lead back to the same spot. There's some dodgy stuff, not really nasty dodgy, but just stuff that you sort of question how it works and whether it's effective. And there's other stuff that's worthwhile and worth having a look at. There's some sites that offer resources for teachers, but again, you've got to spend a lot of time mooching around that to get to it. But they are there, and there are resources there that you can use if you don't want to create your own. And yes, recording on mobile phones depends on the mobile, it depends on its capabilities, and it depends on its connectivity. And some mobile phones will be very easy to upload the stuff, others will be a problem. Any other questions?
Carol, I was just going to add to your comment, and I guess to Rachel's comment, that often the best way to find out how to use new technology is really to see what other people are doing. So, you know, if anybody shows you something, ask them how they're using it. Don't be afraid to ask for more information or to make an appointment and go and see them. But be aware that anything you try to do does take a lot of time to learn, just simply because you've got to sift through, you know, the good from the bad and find out what suits your needs the most.
Yeah, spot on. I'm conscious of time. If I just flip over to the browser, will that take everybody there, Debbie?
It should. I think what you've got to do is just click on to synchronized browsing, which is in moderator, and then synchronized browsing, and then you should be able to take everybody with you.
Let's have a go. Can I have a little smiley face if anybody can see that? That's great. Now, what this is my site. I'll come back to that, Anna, if you'll remind me. If I don't come back to it, I'll answer your question in a minute. What I have here is, this is my own site, and what I've got on here is some mobile games, and what I'm using is some software from the UK, which is specifically for making mobile learning games. And the way that it comes up, I've just produced it now, so it sits on the website, but it looks like this on a mobile device, okay? So this is just an XDA. And this is a series, for example, a series of just quick questions that I've done. So if anyone would like to suggest to me the right answer for that one, tell me your answers. Or if somebody else can click on the right answer, I don't know whether you can click on it from your screens. In that case, all right, anybody like to give me a guess of an answer? How many phones there are in the world today, mobile phones? Ah, can you see the website? Okay, some of you can. Can you see the PDA with the little game on it? Okay, it's obviously coming through very slowly. Okay, you should have a little thing that's headed, "Do you know?" I'll keep going with this. Hang on, I'll just load it again and see if that helps. All right, rather than bore you all with an empty screen, basically what it is, it's just a little quiz, and what you do is you answer the questions and you move forward. Some people are getting it up. All right, so you all need to click on "Do you know?" Oh, so it may work for you all independently. You can just go through it on your own. Have a go at doing it for yourselves then, and tell me if that works. All right. So you can all have a go, and you can then all tell me what your score was. All right. In the meantime, I'll let anybody else ask any other questions while you're doing that, and tell me all when you're finished. Yeah, and you'll get a sad face when you get it wrong. Okay, Wendy gets the prize. Tell us, Wendy, which one did you get wrong?
Actually, I can't remember now. I'd have to go back through them.
Fair enough. And Christine, tell us which one you got right. Okay, fair enough. Now, in answer to Anna's question earlier, she asked about what's the best means of creating podcasts. The program that I use and that I prefer out of all of them is a program called Audacity. And that's Audacity. If you put Audacity into Google, you'll find it. It's a free download program. It is a great program for recording things for making podcasts. You can record stuff, you can stop, you can start, you can do several layers of recording. It's really, really worth having a look at. The site that most of the podcasts sit on are Podomatic, and some people also use iPodder. And if you go and have a little mooch around that site, you'll see all sorts of, and there's lots of people offering advice on how to do it. So have a look at that. Have a go with Audacity, because personally I think that's my favorite. But you can certainly use Odeo. In terms of uploading it, what you do is you go into Podomatic, you set up your account, and it will take you through the process of how you upload your file. Once you've saved your file in Audacity, or save it somewhere where you can go back and get it, the Podomatic will then take you through the instructions, and it will ask you to upload a file just the same way as you might upload a picture or a file to something else. I haven't done it for a little while, so I can't tell you the step-by-step things. Probably MP3 is the best thing to save it in. If it's saved as a wave, Audacity will ask you how you want to save it, and it will do that. Have a look at it, and if you want to send me an email and remind me, I'll double-check it, and then I'll tell you the exact instructions. Well done. Just quickly, Debbie, do you want to flip over to the whiteboard, so that we can have some people put some comments in and have a little bit of a discussion about the sort of things they're doing, and other than the questions we've gone through there, if there's anything else they're thinking of doing.
Okay, because you have taken us, you'll need to unlock the synchronized browsing. So if you could just go in and unlock it, that's lovely. And then we can go to the whiteboard, and here's a plain sheet for you to use.
Okay, what I'd like everyone, or whoever of you want to do, you've raised some of those issues there, but in terms of thinking about what you might want to do, is there any one part of what you're doing now that you think you might be able to put into some sort of mobile device or turn into some sort of digital style activity that can be transmitted to mobile devices?
Carol, I'm just wondering whether we could ask people to perhaps share how they're actually using, if they are using mobile devices with us. That might then lend itself to how they might want to extend their use.
Yep, that's a good idea. I'm just interested in what people are doing and what they think they might want to do. So yeah, anything that you can share with us about what's going on or what you're doing would be fantastic. The other thing to think about... Fantastic. The other thing to think about while you're doing those sort of things is just about the students that you're working with and the media or the devices that they're using and they're working with, and whether or not you find that a challenge or whether you find that good or how you want to work with this. And the other thing that I probably should comment on is the fact that those of us who are of an older generation than a lot of the students will spend much more time trying to nut out and work out programs, whereas a lot of the students and the younger people that we're dealing with won't. They will expect things to work in a moment, and if they don't work, they won't spend a lot of time nutting them out. And if you have a look at some of the big sites that are really popular, like the Facebooks and the MyFaces and even the YouTubes and things like that, they are designed in such a way that it's intuitive. You don't have to think about what you're doing. You are very quickly dragged from one spot to the next, and you're very quickly sucked into the whole process. And so that's something that we need to think about in terms of the way we do things, that we will spend time working out how to make something work, but a lot of our students won't.
Could I ask a question, Carol, of the person who wrote on the whiteboard, recording with Audacity saved as MP3 and uploaded onto TAFE VC, in what area of training have you been doing, or have you done that?
I'm the one that's done that. I've actually, with medical terminology, and I've recorded myself, unfortunately, I have to listen to me, with various scenarios. But what I've been thinking of doing is going through a whole lot of different words for them, different terms, and recording it and putting it up there so they can then put it onto their MP3s. And they don't have to obviously then be at their PC to listen to the terminology.
That sounds great, and that's a really good way of using it.
And also the person who wrote about workplace assessments using PDAs, maybe if you'd explain that a little bit more, that would be really interesting to hear.
That was me, and it was something that we did with the teacher assistants in Cert 3 in Semester 1 of 207. And we experimented with using checklists and observation checklists and a timesheet that they were required to do as part of their workplace assessment. It had potential to be expanded a lot further, but we found that we didn't have the time, and you need to spend quite a bit of time developing the lecturer's skills as well. We also got quite a varied response from different students, so not all of them were happy to embrace that particular technology. At the moment, I'm interested in exploring something using the mobile phone because, as everybody's pointed out, that's very accessible.
Were you asking the students to use PDAs, or was the assessor using the PDA?
It was the students, both actually. The assessor had it, but the students were also given PDAs, and they did part of their assessments directly onto that.
Sorry to keep asking questions. And did they, were those PDAs non-phone PDAs? So did they have mobile phone as well as the PDAs?
They were college property, and so the phone aspect wasn't developed.
Yeah, that's fine. It's just interesting because when we did the PDA experiment with the VCAL students, we gave them PDAs that had phones embedded into them, and the first thing they did when we handed them out, of course, was put their SIM cards into the phone, and then they used it as a one device. There is a little bit of resistance with students using two separate devices. So they sometimes may not have appreciated what they were being given or what they were working with to do that. So I think what you're saying in terms of trying to use something that works with the mobile phones, you may well find that that's better acceptance.
Right, thanks for that, Carol. One thing that we did find that was, there are various little pragmatic sort of issues that came up, and because they were a fairly expensive item that was on loan from the library and therefore their responsibility, there was a big problem with security, and at first they didn't have pouches where they could keep it on them. So it was, it's a learning curve, we would probably be able to iron out a lot of those problems running it again.
Yeah, you're right. And the issue is that with devices like that, you can't actually insure them. So you have to instill in the students some other way of making them precious and valuable. And what I did when I handed out, I think it was 12 devices to VCAL students, everyone told me I was bloody mad. But the interesting thing was that they actually took better care of them than the teachers who'd been using them. So it is an interesting issue, and it is something about which, yeah, organisations have got to get their heads around it, because it physically, I mean, actually you can't insure it. The cost of the premium is ludicrous, so you've got to accept the fact that some are going to get lost. The fear always is they're all going to find them down at Camberwell Market one day, but we found that in actual fact, by instilling in students the importance of what they're doing with them, they tend to take a little bit more care of them and they appreciate them. And I think we lost one where a girl had hers stolen, but all the rest of them, they took immensely good care of them.
Well, we're about at the time. Are there any final questions that anybody would like to ask Carol before we finish for the evening?
Don't hesitate to send me an email or a text message or contact me after this if you think of something after we've all finished. I'm happy to answer anything or to help anybody with anything they're doing.
Okay, well, we might sign off there and say thank you very much to Carol. If you'd like to give, Carol a star or a smiley face, that would be terrific. Can I let you know that the next session, these have come one after the other, simply because we've been trying to get some guest speakers from overseas and linked to the Valbec conference lined up. So next Tuesday night, the 13th of May, we have we're very lucky to have Heidi Sprook Wrigley from New Mexico in America talking to us at probably at 8:30 p.m. We're not sure about the time. I've mucked it up, and 8:30 p.m. is 4:30 a.m. So we just may need to change the time to 9:30 Australian Eastern Standard Time. But Heidi was the keynote speaker at the ACAL conference last year, and is very interactive in terms of talking about ESL and reading. So please join us next week. Don't forget to register if you'd like to. If you have any special interests that you'd like us to follow up in the Literacy Live Room as part of the Professional Development Series, please drop me an email, and I'd be more than happy to have a chat to you about organising specific professional development. Have a good night. Thank you again, Carol. Thank you for everybody joining us tonight. I hope you've enjoyed something. Yes, it is, Don, it is 8:30, but I spoke to Heidi yesterday, and that's 4:30 a.m., so I'm waiting for her to get back to me about confirmation of the time. Okay, that's it for today. We'll have this recording up on the web in a couple of weeks. And please pass on to your colleagues that Literacy Live is alive, and we'd really like to see you here again. Bye.